Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Embassy Office Parks REIT earnings conference call for the fourth quarter and financial year ended 31st March 2021. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ritwik Bhattacharjee, Head of Investor Relations at Embassy REIT. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Margaret. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the fourth quarter FY 2021 earnings call for Embassy REIT. Wherever you are, particularly for those of you listening from India, we hope you and your loved ones are keeping safe. Embassy REIT released its financial results for the quarter and financial year ending March 31st, 2021, a short while back. As is our standard practice, we've placed our quarterly and full-year financial statements, earnings presentation discussing our performance, and a supplemental financial and operating data book on our website at embassyofficeparks.com in the investor section. As always, we would like to inform you that management may make certain comments on this call that one could deem forward-looking statements. Please be advised that the REIT's actual results may differ from these statements. Embassy REIT does not guarantee these statements or results and is not obligated to update them at any time. Further, there are significant risks and uncertainties related to the scope, the severity, and the duration of the ongoing second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, the actions taken to contain and mitigate the pandemic, and the direct and indirect economic effects of the pandemic and the containment measures on Embassy REIT and on our occupiers. Joining me today are Mike Holland, the Chief Executive Officer, Vikaash Khdloya, the Deputy Chief Executive Officer and Chief Operating Officer, and Aravind Maiya, our Chief Financial Officer. Mike will start off with the FY 2021 highlights, the business overview and strategy, followed by Vikaash and Aravind. We will then open the floor to questions. Over to you, Mike.
Thank you, Ritwik. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call today to review our Q4 and full-year FY 2021 results, along with our outlook for the coming year. While Aravind will take you through the detail of our full-year numbers, we are very pleased to confirm that we have delivered in line with the guidance set out at mid-year back in October 2020. You may recollect that at our last earnings update in mid-February, I had expressed optimism at the decline in COVID cases and the resultant acceleration of return to work by our occupiers. Since then, we have seen the acceleration of the vaccine rollout, but the second wave of cases will delay the return to office and consequent uptick in leasing. Despite the current short-term setback with the second wave, we continue to be encouraged on a number of fronts for the mid to longer term. First, in addition to delivering on the guidance set out at mid-year, we have now completed two full years since listing, one of which has been fully under the shadow of the pandemic, and yet we have delivered 24% in total returns. Taking into account Q4 distributions, we will have distributed over 370 billion rupees, approximately $500 million since listing. Second, the resilience of our business has been clearly demonstrated, delivering in such a manner despite the global and local challenges. We remain strong on our operating fundamentals. In FY 2021, we have collected over 99% of our office rents, signed new leases and renewals of 1.2 million sq ft, with re-leasing and renewal spread of 18% and 13% respectively. Even in today's challenging market, our year-end occupancy stands at a healthy 89%. Third, a consensus has emerged, as we had articulated a year ago, that the Office of the Future will be a place for collaboration, community, and learning, and that while we will see more flexibility in the working week, that office, and in particular the type of office products that we provide, the total business ecosystem, will continue to be in demand from the best global companies. The office will continue to be a key tool for attracting and retaining the best science, technology, engineering, and math talent here in India. Fourth, the occupiers which we serve, utilizing technology to support their global businesses, continue to prosper and forecast strong growth, including significant growth in hiring. A recent NASSCOM and Kotak research report estimates a record annual headcount increase of 350,000 in the Indian ITES industry for FY22. In the last 2 weeks, we have heard public results with India's leading technology services companies reporting all-time records in business pipeline and hiring in Q4. Similarly, global banking majors, several of whom have their captive centers in our parks, are reporting record Q4 earnings and growth in their home markets. So numerous strong indicators of growth in our core customer segments. And finally, we again underline the continuing appeal of the office market in India, supporting high-quality global businesses which continue to grow in a digital and geographically agnostic world. Indian office has a strong future. And within India, with over 70% of our portfolio value, we are focused on the leading market, Bangalore, the market with the lowest vacancy, the highest absorption, the largest stock, highest technology export value, and the most global captive centers in India. So even in the midst of this second wave, there is a great deal to be positive about around our business, the last year and the coming years. Looking beyond the pandemic, we are using this period to accelerate our growth through the new on-campus developments, to develop our acquisitions pipeline, to sharpen our long-term ESG plan, to raise the bar with our occupier engagement activities, to continue to reinforce our already strong balance sheet, all to prepare for our next phase of growth as the world returns to work, as it certainly will. Let me now hand over to Vikash to discuss in detail our business and operating performance.
Thanks, Mike. Good evening, everybody. Our business performance was resilient despite the major impact of the pandemic. Business highlights for the full year FY21 include: our properties were fully operational throughout the pandemic with over 90% occupiers operating from our parks. Our rent collections were robust at over 99% and we achieved 13% rent increases on the entire 8.4 million square feet scheduled escalations. Our total lease up stood at 1.2 million square feet across 43 deals. Of this, half were new leases at 18% releasing spread, with the balance being renewals at 13% renewal spread. Our 5.7 million square feet on-campus development program continues at pace, and we are on target for the first phase with the delivery of 1.1 million square feet JP Morgan campus later this year. And finally, our on-ground teams continued our asset management efforts. We successfully integrated the ETV assets, undertook several upgrade projects, as well as wellness initiatives during the last year. Now, let me take you through the details. First, the impact of the second wave on our operations. All our parks continued to remain open for business despite localized restrictions on movement. However, the current second wave with rising daily cases has interrupted the ramp-up in employee numbers at our parks. Consequently, timeline for back-to-office ramp-up is likely to be deferred by 1 to 2 quarters. On the positive side, a mass large-scale vaccination rollout is currently underway in India, and this will positively influence the rate of return to offices, as is the case worldwide. Our on-ground teams continue to support businesses through the second wave. Through our partnerships with leading hospitals, as well as support of local civic authorities, we are facilitating vaccine rollout at our park premises. This is in addition to our safety initiatives and our investment in touchless technology, advanced air filters, etc. Our recent association with Well Institute is another illustration of our focus on providing world-class health and wellness-oriented solutions to our occupiers. Moving to our leasing performance and outlook. In FY21, we collected over 99% of rents on our 32.3 million square feet operating portfolio, secured all our rent escalations due, a 13% escalation on 8.4 million square feet across 94 leases, and successfully concluded 2.9 million square feet of rolling renewals. Delivering on above in a pandemic year reflects the strong underlying covenants of our occupiers and the active lease management efforts by our teams. Further, we leased a total of 1.2 million square feet across 43 deals in FY21 at market rents with an average lease tenure of 8 years. Breaking down this 1.2 million square feet lease up, half were new leases across 23 deals at 18% releasing spread, and the remaining were renewals across 20 deals at 13% renewal spread. For Q4, our total lease up stood at 124,000 square feet across 8 deals comprising 50,000 square feet of new leases and 75,000 square feet of renewals. Also, as reported during the previous call, we witnessed 1.5 million square feet of exits during the last year, a mix of business as usual churn, portfolio housekeeping, and COVID-induced exits. Factoring the above new leases as well as exits, our portfolio occupancy stood at a healthy 88.9% on 32.3 million square feet operating area. While site tours, decision-making, and new deal activity were picking up in January and February, the second wave has once again deferred new leasing decisions for 2 to 3 quarters and is dependent on lifting of localized restrictions on movement as well as speed of vaccine rollout. However, based on our conversations with large occupiers, office demand in India is expected to pick up meaningfully in the midterm given the rapid technology and digital acceleration, growth in underlying businesses of our occupiers as demonstrated by recent hiring trends, necessity for physical office as publicly stated by a number of leading global and Indian corporates, as well as positive impact of lower densities given that social distancing norms are likely to be a permanent feature at workplace. Our portfolio's best-in-class positioning, whether it is a technology sector concentration or a geographic concentration to Bangalore, which has witnessed 37% of overall absorption in this pandemic year, or our portfolio's resilience in Mumbai City, where occupancy stood at a stable 83%, similar to pre-pandemic levels, all of these demonstrate that our properties are well-positioned and likely to be the primary beneficiaries of the significant pent-up occupier demand. Till such time, we continue to maintain our new deal discipline, deepen our occupier connect, and listen to the evolving needs and ready our available spaces for occupiers. Now, an update on our development program. We currently have 5.7 million square feet under development across 4 of our existing campuses in Bangalore, Pune, and Noida, which are due for delivery over the next 2 to 3 years. This development helps us expand our existing campuses and is significantly de-risked. First, only 1.1 million square feet is due for completion over the next full year, and this built-to-suit campus is already fully pre-committed to JP Morgan and on track for delivery in September 21. Second, over 70% of our current development is in Bangalore, by far India's best office market, and in 2 of our largest and market-dominant properties, Embassy Manyata and Embassy Tech Village. Third, construction permits are in place and financial closure has already been achieved for these projects. The timing of a new build project fits well into expected demand bounce back in early CY 2022 and increased emphasis by global corporates on the quality of campus infrastructure. Current RFPs in the market, already standing at over 20 million square feet, are also likely to gain significant momentum given the continued hiring and growth reported by tech occupiers and global captive centers or GCCs. Further, international property consultants have already assessed the two-year forward supply to be down by 25%, and actual supply slippages may be significantly higher. This provides an opportunity to undertake new builds at attractive development yields, given land is already paid for and given our financing costs are amongst the lowest in the industry. Hence, we continue to invest in new on-campus development as a significant growth driver to enhance our future operating income and DPU. Next, we are continually enhancing our total business ecosystem. In Q4, we fully integrated the recently acquired ETV property into our portfolio. We transitioned the on-ground team, stepped up the execution pace of the 1.1 million square feet built-to-suit campus, and have kick-started an additional 1.9 million square feet of office development. Given ETV's presence in a key submarket in Bangalore, this acquisition has enabled significant addition to our market offerings to occupiers and will drive our portfolio's growth. We have doubled down on our asset management efforts and are utilizing this downtime to implement planned infrastructure and upgrade projects to continually enhance our value proposition. Notable completions planned in the year ahead include the amphitheater, flyover and skywalks at Embassy Manyata, addition of over 100,000 square feet F&B and amenity spaces across our portfolio, and the comprehensive asset repositioning of Embassy Quatron. At early stages of planning is the integration with proposed metro stations for our ETV, Embassy Manyata and Embassy Quadron properties. While our two operating hotels totaling 477 keys witnessed an uptick in occupancy in Q4 with improved visibility of business on books, the second wave and travel restrictions have negatively impacted room demand. Both our hotel operators, Hilton and Four Seasons, are working towards an improved performance contribution in FY22. Our ESG initiatives have always been a significant part of our business philosophy, and our three-year ESG roadmap, including GRESB assessment, is already underway. Our 100-megawatt solar park helps reduce an estimated 200 million kilograms of carbon footprint by providing green energy to our occupiers, and our 525-kilowatt rooftop solar project at Embassy 247, Mumbai, has been awarded the best green building project of the year. We also continue our work within our local communities, particularly through our Corporate Connect and education programs. Moving to our positive midterm outlook. As we conclude a challenging but successful year for Embassy REIT, delivering to our investors and our corporate occupiers, we remain agile and flexible with our leasing efforts, and we continue to gear up for our next growth cycle through 5.7 million square feet new development. We are utilizing this period of pause in decision making by occupiers to fortify our assets through investment in infrastructure and amenities and to be ready for the anticipated resurgence in demand. We will see acquisition opportunities emerge and we will continue to assess such opportunities in the market for our previously stated criteria. In the midterm, as we look beyond the pandemic, we are well placed to capitalize on the future opportunities given the continued growth in our occupier businesses, especially technology and global captives, and given that our portfolio comprises some of the highest quality properties in the India office market. It is very clear that our differentiated office portfolio will continue to attract quality occupiers, and that owners who have invested in amenities, services and technology will secure increased market share moving forward. Over to Arvind now for the financial update.
Thanks, Vikas. Good evening, everybody. I will be covering three key areas with you today. That is, our FY 2021 performance, a brief update on our balance sheet, and outlook for FY22. Let me start with the financial highlights for FY21, which include net operating income grew by 12% year over year to rupees 20,323 million, with operating margins at 86%. Total distributions stood at Rs. 18,364 million or Rs. 21.48 per unit, representing a 100% payout ratio, with Q4 distributions of Rs. 5,308 million or Rs. 5.6 per unit for the quarter. Simplified the holding structure of Embassy Manyata, thereby increasing the tax-free component of distributions to 78% for Q4. Raised Rs. 52 billion debt at attractive 6.9% coupon and refinanced Rs. 32.8 billion existing debt, leading to 336 basis points interest savings, and maintained a fortress balance sheet with liquidity of Rs. 15.5 billion and low leverage of 22%. Now let me take you through the details. First, our NOI and DPU were on target with our annual guidance. Our revenue from operations for FY21 grew by 10% year over year to Rs. 23,603 million, mainly due to ETV acquisition, contracted rent escalations, and income from new deliveries in Q4 of FY20, which were partially offset by reduction in hotel revenues and decrease in commercial office revenues due to occupier exits. Our net operating income for FY21 grew by 12% year over year to Rs. 20,323 million, in line with increase in our revenue from operations, and reflects savings due to our cost-saving initiatives. Our delivered NOI is on target with our full-year NOI guidance. Further, on a same-store basis, NOI grew by 2% year-over-year, reflecting the underlying covenant of our 190-plus creditworthy occupiers and the contractual growth inbuilt in our lease contracts. Our EBITDA for FY21 grew by 12% year-over-year to Rs. 19,693 million, in line with our increase in our NOI. We've included further details on each of the above components for Q4 in our earnings materials. Our net distributable cash flow for the quarter stood at Rs. 5,324 million, and the Board of Directors have declared a Q4 FY21 DPU of Rs. 5.6, with the tax-free portion of distributions increasing to 78% for the quarter, given the successful completion of Embassy Manyata's restructuring. For the full year FY21, we have delivered distributions totaling Rs. 18,364 million or Rs. 21.48 per unit on target with a full year DPU guidance. We are also pleased to confirm that the acquisition of ETV assets is accretive to our NOI and DPU as reflected in our Q4 numbers. As you can see, our robust cash collection ratios, leading operating margins, low manager fee, and prudent leverage to fund select CapEx and growth initiatives result in a healthy NOI to unlevered distributions conversion. Next, an update on a strong balance sheet. In Q4, we raised Rs. 26 billion of listed debt at an impressive 6.4% coupon, our lowest cost debt till date, which were primarily utilized to refinance ETV's in-place debt. Further, we've also secured Rs. 11 billion of SPV-level construction debt at 7.9% cost, one of the lowest in the industry. To round up our full-year activity in the debt markets, we successfully raised Rs. 52 billion debt at an impressive 6.9% coupon through a combination of REIT-level listed debt and SPV-level debt, and we refinanced Rs. 32.8 billion debt at 6.9%, leading to 336 basis points interest cost savings. We continue to maintain a strong liquidity position of Rs. 15.5 billion and a low leverage of 22% net debt to gross asset value. Considering our AAA credit rating, additional pro forma headroom of Rs. 126 billion and our ability to raise debt at competitive rates, we are in a strong position to pursue growth through on-campus development and accretive acquisition, thereby enhancing overall return to our unit holders. Moving to other financial updates, our independent valuer undertook a detailed property valuation exercise at year-end and assessed the GAV of the portfolio at Rs. 466 billion, with 95% of REIT's value from our core commercial office segment and with over 72% of value from Bangalore. We recognized an impairment loss of rupees 989 million in our hospitality business as well as Embassy One due to slower occupancy ramp-up and current economic conditions due to the second wave. Factoring the above, our net asset value as at March 21 stood at rupees 387.54 per unit, a 3.3% increase to NAV as of September 20. We are pleased to deliver on the simplification of Embassy Manyata holding structure within the timelines committed. Collapsing of the legacy two-tier structure has enabled Embassy REIT to significantly increase the tax-free component of its overall distributions, and our Q4 numbers reflect the enhanced post-tax return to unit holders. Further, we have initiated the simplification of holding structure of our newly acquired Embassy Tech Village assets and expect this to be completed by September 21. Lastly, our outlook for FY22. As Mike and Vikas mentioned, the current second wave is likely to delay return to work and consequently defer leasing plans by occupiers in the short term. Considering this, we believe it is prudent to defer annual guidance for FY22 till such time we have more clarity on trajectory of the second wave. However, I will provide a few key building blocks of our business components which may have a bearing on our FY22 NOI and distributions. To start with, we will benefit from the full year impact of the successful 8.4 million square feet lease escalations in FY21. Further, we have an additional 7.7 million square feet of upcoming contracted escalations across 89 leases during the course of FY22, with an average 14% rent increase. Similar to FY21, we believe we will be able to achieve most of these rent escalations, as well as achieve continued current trend of collecting close to 100% of office rents. We are currently 89% occupied as of March 21, with 3.6 million square feet existing vacancy. Of our 1.9 million square feet expiries in FY22, basis of conversations with occupiers, 0.5 million square feet are likely renewals, and balance 1.4 million square feet are likely exits at this stage. The in-place rents on these exits are significantly below market and provide over 50% mark-to-market opportunity. We expect new lease deals to see traction and conclusion towards the end of calendar year 21, with an expected rebound in calendar year 22. We expect the full year impact of ETV acquisition to reflect in both NOI and NDCF for FY22. As you are aware, we acquired ETV assets in the last week of December 20, and these assets contributed to the NOI and NDCF accretion in Q4 of FY21. And finally, we will determine the timing, coupon structure, and contours of a potential refinance of our initial rupees 36.5 billion listed debt based on the then prevailing market conditions. This NCD is due for redemption in June 22 with call options in November 21 and Jan 22 for early prepayment. Recent budget amendment enabling FPI participation in REIT debt, as well as the recent IRDA announcement in mid-April permitting insurance companies to invest in REIT debt, both give us access to longer tenor and larger pools of debt capital and are expected to be positive for our debt refinancing plans. These developments are very positive for us as a falling interest cost scenario contributes incrementally to our distributable cash flows to the benefit of our unit holders. We remain focused on delivering our NOI and quarterly distributions, maintaining our balance sheet discipline, and continue to reduce the cost of debt. Even after one of the most challenging years for businesses worldwide, we are pleased to report that Embassy REIT remains in great financial shape with a robust balance sheet, which provides a strong platform for organic and inorganic growth in the coming years. Over to Mike for his concluding remarks.
Thank you, Arvind. So the key takeaways. We have delivered on guidance for the past year, FY21, with 5,308 million distributions for Q4 and full year distributions of 18,364 million, underscoring the resilience of our business model through a full 12-month pandemic environment. Notwithstanding the uncertainties created by the second wave, and the subsequent delay that will result in the reopening of offices and consequent leasing, our business remains resilient and ready for the future growth opportunities. Our occupiers are largely international, technology-driven, and growing. On all parameters, we believe this will feed through to a leasing recovery in due course, though timing has been delayed. We are absolutely confident in our various theses around the business. The total business ecosystem in this digital talent nation, our geographic concentration, our on-campus development, and our ESG focus. The management team remains focused, doing all that can be done in the current external environment to deliver in the best interests of our unit holders. And we remain excited on the growth opportunities that lie ahead for our business. We're happy to drill into any details in Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset mode while asking a question. We would also request participants to restrict your questions to two at a time. If you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Murtuza Arziwala from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for the details sort of opening the remarks. I have my question really is on, you know, how much in the near term is the downside, you know, and coming more specifically, we've seen over the last 12 months the occupancy drop by a few percentage points. And more importantly, if I look at the expiry number that you put out, you know, in terms of the forward expiry, for FY22, it used to be about 1.2, moved up to 1.5. Now the current quarter, it stands at about 1.9, of which you talk about 1.4 being likely exits. You know, if we were to take that as a certainty, you have the existing set of vacancy of 3.5 million square feet plus another 1.5. So is that it, or it's still sort of, you know, you're playing by each quarter depending on how the sort of pandemic behaves to get a sense of what is the near-term damage in terms of occupancies, vacancies, etc. If you could throw some light on that based on your interactions with the tenants.
Yeah, Murtaza, I'll make some comments on that and then I'll ask Vikash to add. You know, look, I think we all experienced from January and February a very positive environment, and we spoke to many of our occupiers who were accelerating their move back to the office, who were talking to us about their overall business growth, spoke to some occupiers who had hired more people in the last financial year than any of their time in India. You know, so businesses that we're catering to have a very positive outlook. We definitely feel that we're in a timing situation here, that there obviously is a delay, that 2-3 quarters perhaps, but that fundamentally the businesses are strong. We've gone through the detail of our expiries. We've used our best judgment and, of course, basing also on conversations that we're having with those tenants. And that split of the likely exit and the balance at this point is our best assessment of where that will be. Now, you'll remember, of course, from last year that, in essence, with the six-month notice at the end of any lease term, we're able to look forward with great confidence on a six-month basis. So as the year moves forward, we'll be able to keep you updated quarter by quarter on that. But as it stands, that's our best estimate of likely renewals.
Yeah, why don't I give you an example, Murtuza? You know, Mike mentioned about the health of the occupier businesses. So, you know, I was speaking to the CRE of one of our existing occupiers, a Fortune 10 healthcare company, and you know the conversation revolved around when can we move to an LOI and a binding documentation. We are in advanced stages of a additional space deal there, and it's been obviously paused. So you know the flavor that we got during the conversation was that one, they've acquired one smaller company in the similar domain. Two, they're looking to consolidate some of the other smaller offices into one of our properties. Three, there's a clear mandate from the business that we need to they need to de-densify, from the 65-70 square feet per person to more like 90-100, and they had a classification range based on the kind of work people do. And you know, this is not it. They're also saying that they are growing organically themselves, hiring more people. So you know, just to give you a flavor, that one, it's more of a timing issue. There's a complete pause. Businesses which have hit record results, record sales, the stock is 50%, 80% up. Even they are not able to, or they don't want to take a call right now and just want things to normalize a bit more. So you know, that these are the kind of GCCs, the captives that we cater to. Definitely in the short term, some of the expiries are being preponed from an FY23, a 200,000 square feet came to the FY22 bucket, as you rightly mentioned. You know, we see this more like a short-term phenomenon. It's been a year since we have been into the pandemic, so we think today this is our best estimate of what the exits could be in FY22. The occupiers continue to review their portfolio optimization strategies, and you know, some of them would want in the short term to give up space. At the same time, we are seeing these large global captives who have started to think about the 22 and beyond the pandemic requirements. So it's going to evolve. We'll have to wait and see next two or three quarters, but we remain really positive for the midterm.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Tayal from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. A couple of questions from my end. Firstly, how are you thinking about the rental trend going ahead? So I guess, you know, last year panned out rather well, but as we face the second year of low occupancy, would you think that the rental trend could be any different either on getting the contracted increases or catch up during renewals? And then the second one is, I appreciate the 1.4 million square feet of expected churn in the coming year as being BAU churn. But at 47% under-renting, you know, wondering why the tenants will be going elsewhere. So if there's any color you could provide as to, you know, what's really driving these exits would be great. Thanks.
Yeah, so again, I'll take the question about rental trend. So as you rightly say, you know, the point that we were able to secure on 8.4 million square feet, 100% of our lease escalations, I think, giving us a overall average of 13%. That was a great result. And as we've said again, we believe that 7.7 million square feet that we've got this year of contracted escalations, that we will secure that or very close to that. You know, we've got no reason to believe there'll be any change around that. You understand our business model. The occupiers in the space have their CapEx fit-outs. There's a lot of inertia that prevents a move. In terms of overall rentals in the market, I've said before, and I underline it, that these decisions are not decisions about stay or go, expand, choose another building. They are not fundamentally about the rental and the rental rates. You know better than probably anyone on this call the industries that we cater to, the technology industries. You know how well they are doing, and that decisions that are single-digit percentages of their costs, that is rentals, is not what drives decisions to stay, go, expand, contract. So we believe, again, that the overall product quality, and as Vikash mentioned, we're doubling down in some areas on that to make sure that the portfolio is really best in class, best in the market. We believe, and we've demonstrated that through some of the deals that we've done in the last year, that the best occupiers are not price sensitive, we believe, and you'll see IPC confirming that certainly in our main market, Bangalore, we remain a low vacancy market, and we're confident that the best companies will continue to pay the sort of numbers in rentals that have been the case.
And Kunal, just to add to what Mike said and address your second part of the question as well. So, you know, just to, on the first part, all the 1.2 million square feet that we leased out in FY21 were at market rent on a blended basis. So we maintained the pricing discipline. You know, again, it's not a question of price today. It's a question of are they ready to make a decision. Having said that, I would just want to qualify what Mike said about the core markets with the fact that Mumbai definitely is seeing a rental pressure. And I think Mumbai is the one exception where we believe there will be continued rental pressure over the next at least 3 to 4 quarters. So that's on the rental trend. Other than that, Bangalore and all the other markets which cater to the GCCs and the technology companies large scale, those we think will remain stable. Coming to your second question, if the mark-to-markets are 47%, 50%, why are these guys leaving? So let me break down the categories of occupiers who are looking to give up space and, you know, what's happening there. So, you know, obviously we spoke about the COVID-induced exit. Bulk of that, you know, we saw through last year during the first year of the pandemic. The businesses with really weak business models. Then came obviously the portfolio housekeeping, which is basically large occupiers, mostly IT services companies who have got a million square feet or, you know, a large spaces with us and a really largest portfolio in India overall, who are now looking to do portfolio housekeeping to just optimize. So that's the second, and obviously third is business as usual, whether it's relocation, consolidation, etc. So these are the three broad categories. And what we have seen in underlying trends within the occupiers is that this global captive, the large banks and financial services companies, they have taken a call, based on our discussions, that, they want to continue to plan for their consolidation and growth in 22, 23, 24 onwards. And that's why we refer to the RFP pipeline. So we believe when the decision-making pause comes to a fruition and, you know, people start making decisions, these captives will be the first to take the decisions, because for them the quality of the spaces and the talent is really important. And then will follow behind them will be the technology and the product development companies, you know. And then the last to follow in the pack would be the IT services companies. While it's counterintuitive, given that they have seen record deal wins and record hiring, I think given their clients have permitted work from home, they're kind of going to be last to ramp up on space. And when they do, we think it will be a disproportionate, to the benefit of the office industry. So all in all, portfolio housekeeping and the fact that we're into the 8th, 10th, 12th year of the lease tenure, fully fitted out, fully amortized fit out, make it less sticky for them. And they're taking a more short-term view that, okay, let me just save on some cost now. We think we'll gradually replace these IT services companies' more legacy leases with global captives who are looking to, you know, upgrade and come into larger business campuses.
Got it. Thanks, Akash. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saurav Kumar from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
So two questions. So one is on the slide 43. So the 3,800 crores of debt maturity that you have, what is the current rate on this? And, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what the interest cost saving you can potentially achieve in fiscal 23. So basically, the point is of the overall 10,000 crore debt, how much can the cost come down next year? So that's one. And the second is on the slide 24, where you've given the rent escalation. So the way I should read the slide is, slide 28, sorry. So the rent escalations are on 89 rupees, 7.7 million square feet, 14% rent escalation is what is pretty much going to happen.
Yeah. Hi, sort of Vikas here. So why don't I take the second one first and hand it over to Arvind. So on slide 28, what we're trying to say is that 89 is the number of occupiers on the number of leases which come up for escalation. Just to give you a flavor that it's not concentrated on, you know, few leases, it's spread over a lot of leases. And as you rightly said, 14% is the blended escalation. Some of them are legacy, so 12-13%, most of them are 15%.
And, you know, that on the entire area is 7.7 million square feet during the course of the year.
So, Vikash, what will be the organic? I'm just trying to figure out the 610 crore NOI you have. Leaving out the vacancies for a moment, what is the organic growth for next year? That's basically the point.
So, you know, just to, again, I'm just going to give you rough numbers here. But sort of if you factor the FY22 escalations on a full year basis, annualized rentals, it is approximately 2.9%. And FY21 escalations are about 2.4% of the annualized rental obligations.
And if I can just add on to that organic growth, Saurabh, one is the escalation. And secondly, you know, without getting into specific numbers, we of course have the growth coming in from the FY21 leasing as well, and a little bit of the Q4 FY20 leasing, which had a little longer entry period because of COVID. So we do have organic growth coming in from that as well. So that is in relation to the second part of your question. Saurabh, going to the first one, the expiries of 3,800 crores, substantial portion of that is the 3,650 crores of our Series 1 bond, the NCD. Now, that is at an average of 9.35%.
Okay.
That's something, as we stated, we will look at refinancing that, you know, either at November 21 or Jan 22, because these are the call options we have for prepayment.
Okay. So, on 3,800 crores, basically, if we take the incremental cost, which is 7-odd%, effectively, you're saving 2% odd, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And the 4,800 crores will have the same cost as well? It'll be that 8.5% or the fiscal 24?
So, 4,800, if you broadly see, these are the more recent bonds which we did. Okay. 4,800 will be, I would say, an average of more close to 7%.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Lakhan from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. Just want to get some sense on the exits. So I understand these include your BAU exits and, COVID impacted exits. What I wanted to understand is, are you factoring in exits here where occupiers want to stay in your park but have reduced their space requirements? So what I want to understand basically is whether in the exit guidance, are you also including the occupiers who may move to hybrid models?
Let me just comment generally on that. I think what we've done, we've looked at the whole portfolio, we've looked at the current leasing contracts for all of the tenants. We've based also on the conversations that we're having with all of our tenants. I think this is the best assessment that we have. I think that it would be fair to assume that the most significant exits or downsizing for COVID impacted industries have probably fed their way through, but we can't be 100% sure of that, but that's our view at the moment, that this is our best assessment of the position.
And Kunal, just to add to what Mike said, the decision on a hybrid model will evolve similar to the decision on de-densification. So I think we will see both these factors play out, you know, as we move forward. We think it will be a positive impact. The number of global businesses and Indian businesses have said work from home is not sustainable. I think we feel very positive. And de-densification is a necessity based on whatever discussions we've had on ground.
But essentially, the de-densification may not net off if at all there is any movement towards or increase in the vacancy levels.
I think everybody has had a year to look at this and plan. You remember we talked about this whole pause, assess, accelerate phenomenon. We would expect that occupiers have figured out their medium term strategy in terms of de-densification versus the hybrid working side of things, and that by now they would have made those moves and made those changes. And also, I would just underscore that a very significant part of our portfolio are these global captive centers who are growing significantly, who are speaking to us and reporting in the public very significant hiring additions through the pandemic. So again, we think, as we've said before, that the de-densification plus hiring growth is likely to, by quite some margin, outweigh any impact of hybrid working, particularly for our type of occupier.
Sure. My second question was on, if you can provide a bridge from for ETV assets particularly, a bridge between the NOI and NDCF, because NDCF is slightly on the higher side. I understand there are some, there's some rental support, there are some fit-out rentals. If you can give that bridge between NOI to NDCF for ETV.
Sure. Honestly, the bridge for NOI to NDCF is very similar to what we put out as part of our acquisition materials. So basically, if you see the three key items from NOI to NDCF, one, we have the finance cost. Now, we know the exact finance cost at which we raised a 2,600 crore bond as well as the existing 1,500 crore debt. That's number one. Number two is the Sarla rent support, or the JP Morgan rent support from Embassy sponsor. We had put out the number in the acquisition material, which is around 28 crores per quarter. That's number two. And number three is the fit-out rentals, which is accounted as finance lease, and we get approximately about 17 crores per quarter on that. These are the three big moving pieces in terms of the bridge from NOI to EBITDA. I'm excluding the smaller items like operating expenses, etc.
I'll take this offhand because the NDCF was lower than NOI in the bridge you had provided for first half. But in this case, in this quarter, it's actually NDCF is higher than NOI. I'll take it offline. Yeah.
So I can specifically respond to this. In terms of Q4, there is a one-off item in terms of tax refunds. So I have excluded that for the purpose of explaining you the bridge, because that's a one-off item in Q4. And that's one of the reasons why you see that number to be high for Q4. But on a steady-state basis for FY22, we believe that the bridge as well as the accretion will be similar to what we had put out in the acquisition materials.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Puneet Gulati from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity. Can you please help me understand what's happening to the same store occupancy? So that seems to have fallen more than the normal occupancy, while at the same time you have leased the existing area instead of new area. How should one read this?
Hey, Puneet. Hi, this is Vikash here. So you are correct. The same store occupancy as of March 21 is 87%.
Yes.
So it has... the reason for the fall is a couple of reasons. One is Embassy Quarter, we had mentioned this during last call. We had two occupiers, one who looked at portfolio optimization, and the second who relocated and consolidated to the east of Pune. So that's one key reason for the drop in the same store occupancy. Plus, of course, we have seen a couple of portfolio housekeeping items in our largest asset, Embassy Manyata. So these are the two key reasons, and they are, probably last year, the top five exits that we had, right, in terms of the actual exits we had, contributed to two-thirds of the overall, exits last year. So given ETV is a more newer asset, given the fact that most of the leases are within lock-in, we have not seen exits or expiries in ETV. So that is the reason you see the same store occupancy drop. But now, post ETV acquisition, we look at the portfolio as one large portfolio. But that's the breakdown of the numbers.
Yeah, but the overall occupancy is higher than same store occupancy, and that's what I haven't been able to understand.
Yes. That is correct, because ETV, which we acquired in December, stays resilient, and ETV's occupancy is about 97-98%.
Okay, so
that contributes to a blended 89% overall.
Got it. My second question is on Manyata. For two consecutive quarters we've seen area getting vacant, and that I thought was one of the strongest in the entire portfolio. What's happening there? Why is it taking more time to lease Manyata?
Yeah. So, Mike, do you want to make some comment?
Yeah, I mean, let me make some general comments on Manyata. It is at 93.5% occupancy, so highly occupied. But you also have to look at it as, it is an anchor and has been in the Bangalore market, really dominating North Bangalore for 10 to 15 years. So, one of the great appeals that we have around Manyata is that the leases that are coming up for expiry over the next couple of years there have a really significant potential mark-to-market. So these are the types of occupiers who might have emerged in the mid to late 2000s, perhaps more in the IT services sector, precisely that segment that is large scale, but looking at efficiencies going forward. Now, we've said before, we've reported on discussions and negotiations about those renewals. They are large-scale leases, so those discussions take place for one, two more years before expiry. So those conversations are ongoing. The positive that we've got to highlight on that is the mark-to-market potential on these older legacy leases is well in excess of 50%, as I think Arvind mentioned. So we're doing a lot of work around infrastructure improvement at Manyata. We are well advanced with the flyover that is easing traffic on the north side. We're well advanced with the hotel and conferencing center, which many occupiers are really speaking very positively about. They like the idea of that pay-per-use on the conferencing center. That will give us a strong competitive advantage. So with that infrastructure upgrade, with the hotel, with the metro coming at the entrance to that park, we believe that we're really well positioned for these lease negotiations as they come up this year and next for that mark-to-market.
Yeah, and just to add, Puneet, to what Mike mentioned, just to put in context, a 300,000 square feet exit in Manyata is about 2% of the overall Manyata occupancy. It's a really large asset, and given a bunch of the leases are legacy leases, 10 plus years old. Manyata started leasing in 2006-07, so we are seeing that expected churn. Maybe COVID has expedited it by a year or so. We are seeing that churn of the older generation occupiers and tenants moving out or trimming their portfolio. And just like we see in ETV, the new age, the more global captives and the high-end technology companies will start taking the space. So I think Manyata will see that transition. It will mean that, of course, on a positive side, there is MTM. Of course, that also means that there may be a void period given the muted demand outlook for the next two quarters or so.
Okay, so will it be fair to assume then, as Mike also mentioned, that one should wait for the infrastructure to get completed before we see it going back? Because it used to be 99.3% just about 5-6 quarters back. So should we wait for the infrastructure to complete?
No, I don't think it's about waiting for the infrastructure. I mean, bear in mind that the decisions around leases for these types of large-scale occupiers are really long-term decisions. Indeed, we're using that infrastructure work which is going on now to our advantage in discussion with occupiers who might even be 2 years away from this point. So just the fact that that infrastructure is coming will work to our advantage in lease negotiations.
So Puneet, just to give you a perspective, this is just because demand is muted, no decisions is being taken. Otherwise, just about 15 months back, we were leasing out NXT, the newest building at Manyata, at about 105, 110 rupees, while CBI's assessment is 92 rupees. So I'm just giving you a context of, it's just about the pause. We just need to be patient 2-3 quarters or so. Once decision making comes back, this is our most dominant asset, we will see lease up, and we are willing to be patient and disciplined, given the significant mark to market. We can't do deals which are so significantly below market.
Okay. Got it. Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pulkit Patni from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thanks a lot for taking my question. My question is more on the bookkeeping side. Just to understand the revenue for ETV, so if we look at the occupancy of about 97.8% and 6.1 million square feet at 70 rupees, that translate into a revenue of about 125-126 crore. What you've reported is about 171 crore. So I understand there would be some CAMs in it. But how come the delta is so big? Can you explain what the difference really is?
I think in terms of the breakup, this is similar to what we had mentioned. The revenues, this includes the revenue from the rentals as well as fit-out income a little bit, as well as a little bit of additional car park over and above the CAM income. This is the breakup of the 170 crores of revenue what we have from Tech Village Asset.
Go ahead.
I think, Pulkit, maybe the better metric may be NOI. Given the CAM, both the revenues are reflected here and the expenses will be reflected in NOI.
Sure. But I mean, the delta in the revenue is quite significant. Maybe what I'll do is I'll just take it offline to understand that better. I just have one more question.
We can help you with that.
So my second question is on the GAV for the solar asset. On a quarterly basis, there's a reduction of about 70 crores. So anything happening there, any problem with receivable, etc.? Or is that, again, normal course of business?
It's just normal course of business. Basically, we have factored in for two things. One, if you are aware, the solar is a limited life asset, which is a contract for 25 years. So there will be a natural decrease as time passes. That's number one. Number two, what the valuers have done is they have kind of rationalized the mix between industrial and commercial tariffs. That has also caused the reason for a little bit of decrease in the value. These are the two primary reasons and there's nothing else.
No impairment in this?
No, there is no impairment in this.
Okay. Thank you. That's it from my side.
There's no issues on the collection. It's just about the offtake of demand and, some of it we are having to do it at industrial tariff given the low occupancy.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Karan Khanna from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is from Mike. Mike, is there anything that you're picking up from global markets like Australia and Singapore that have contained the outbreak well? What I'm trying to understand is post-containment, with what sort of a lag did leasing activity start picking up in these markets?
Yeah. So, look, I do think we have got in India a fundamentally different office leasing market and business to many of the international markets that you talk about. That said, one of the biggest US REITs reported in the last couple of days, they're seeing some level of leasing activity. But this market is really a different type of animal, different type of users, the scale of the type of deals that we do, and so on and so forth. There's definitely a pickup in leasing in those international markets. We heard earlier today there is a flight to quality in those markets, which we absolutely would expect, and we will see that in India, that companies will use this time to make sure that they've got good quality, safe, compliant spaces. Many companies will do new fit outs, de-densify, and so on. But what is a common theme across both Asian and Western markets is that people are moving back to the workplace, including many of those technology companies, and there have been some widely
publicized statements by business leaders. So that's very encouraging. We think the fact that we've got the vaccine rollout here in India will also support that back to work, back to office phase.
Sure. And the second question is for Vikas. Vikas, in the last call you mentioned that one of your top 10 clients that was looking for 120 square feet, new discussion was keeping 150 square feet per individual in mind. Well, you've also briefly touched upon that de-densification aspect earlier on in this call. In the last 1 year, have you seen or received any meaningful RFPs with respect to de-densification? Because globally, we have seen some of the leading banks talking about meaningful reduction in their long-term real estate requirements as they start adopting a more hybrid model, with, which will require lesser space overall.
Yeah, so, you know, Karan, thanks for the question. So two or three couple of things there, right? One, I think given the second wave, it's still a little early for the de-densification to play out. But, all logic, all data, both by different property consultants, our conversations with occupiers, as well as the Fortune 10 global company example I gave earlier, all point to the fact that it will be a factor for the best quality occupiers, the kind of customers that we cater to. That's one. Two, I think we'll have to distinguish a little bit between the global banking majors and the captives, with what they're trying to achieve in India. In India, what they're doing is they're here to ramp up in numbers, to tap the talent here. And, India is a significantly different demographic for them in terms of just the average age group between 25 to 35 employees, 35 years for the employees. So having said that, I think what we are hearing, early conversations from the same subset that you mentioned, the banks and the financial institutions, is they are actually looking to grow more, to take up more space, and obviously de-densification is factored into the new consolidation and business plan. And, they're having this as a midterm outlook for 22, 23, 24, and, they are proceeding on that basis. So we actually think it's going to be a little different for India, simply because, one, the costs for these global captives is negligible, with respect to rent. And more importantly, if they have to hire this best quality talent Mike mentioned about earlier, they really need to ensure they provide them with safe and wellness-oriented properties, more so now, during and post-COVID than earlier, to ensure they attract the best talent and also ensure they're productive. So we think it will take some time to play out post the pause over the next one or two or three quarters. But we think the largest occupiers we have spoken to, they're actually thinking on these lines, on how to consolidate, move into larger campuses, increase the space utilized per employee. It has gone down to as low as 60, 65 square feet per person. That is definitely going to increase. Estimates say 100 to 120. Different occupiers will have different thresholds, but that is one thing we definitely think will happen. The timing of it, obviously, will have to tie it up with the increase in the resurgence in demand. Mike, would you want to add something?
Yeah, I think, it's a really great question and topic, Karen. I just want to give three or four specific examples. So, one, it's not all about density. So that conversation that I had with a global technology company who's a tenant of ours in one of our business parks in the last month, saying that they'd hired 18% increase in their headcount in the last year. It was the biggest hiring uptick that they've ever had in India. So the hiring uptick washes away any conversation about density, right? So that's one factor. So it's just the pure addition of headcount. And that's also definitely applicable to the big banking companies. And we have that direct feedback. The other issue is that many of the global captives, and I'm thinking of some public statements that have been made by a couple of them, have talked about how they have, over the last few years, decade or so, as they've been growing so quickly, that density that they were starting out with 200 or 220 per person had gone down simply because they couldn't keep up with the hiring rate, that they're now bringing that back up to that 200 square foot type of density. And just a third and final point, this issue about workspace per employee, and I think you might be alluding to that in one of the banking statements that was made in the last couple of weeks. You know, we have a relationship with one of the big global banks. When they built their own campus, they provided spaces for only 80 of every 100 employees, because that takes account of the fact that people are out of the office on holiday and so on and so forth. So that level of efficiency has always been there in the way in which people design their office spaces. So we'll probably see actually less of that compressing, and that will result in a lower density per person going forward. So it's absolutely clear there are going to be more people working in a less dense office environment in India, and that may well be very different from some of the global markets that we talked about.
Good. Thanks, Mike, in regards to the detailed explanation. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prashant Kothari from Pictet. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks for all the details here. I just wanted to understand the hesitation in providing guidance. I mean, we had a fantastic year where we were able to meet the guidance despite all the challenges. So what is that with uncertainty that they're saying? I mean, is it related to occupancy? Is it related to renewal deals? What's the best that's playing on your mind to provide guidance?
So, Prashant, I think as I didn't mention as part of my prepared remarks, while we have laid out some of the key movers, we are, as of today, uncertain about the trajectory of the second wave, and that's the primary reason why we have decided to defer guidance. And Prashant, just taking you back 1 year, same time last year, we had taken a similar decision, because that's when the COVID was started initially, and we had taken a decision to not give guidance for FY21. But having said that, sometime during the middle of the year, when it was more clear on how the picture would emerge, we gave a guidance for FY21. So that's primarily the reason why we've deferred guidance as of now, Prashant. Mike, you want to add on anything?
Well, you know, I would just underscore the fact that we deferred a year ago, 6 months ago, or at mid-year, we gave guidance, and at the end of this year, we delivered it, delivered on that guidance. So we can see quite well 6 months out in our business, as we've explained before, because of the six-month lease termination notices. We are simply being prudent about this second wave has come in very quickly. I think all of us are looking at it and wondering how quickly will we get back on the very positive trajectory we were on. So, you know, it's important to us that we deliver on guidance as we did last year. We've given you a number of areas and framework that I think you'll be able to get a fairly good picture, and we will keep updating you as best we can every quarter.
I think it would still be helpful if you were to provide at least some minimum kind of guidance that we are delivering at least minimum dividend per unit of this much, at least at the lower intensive expectations.
I'm not getting you, I'm afraid.
So Prashant, hi, Vikash here. So, you know, what we'll do is we take the feedback, we will revisit it next quarter, and based on, you know, how the situation is looking at that point in time, we will consider providing a guidance. As of now, we just have deferred it, but we take your feedback. You know, we just want to get a little more color and comfort on the trajectory of the second wave.
Okay, understood. And you have about 1 million square feet coming up as an expiry in FY22. Given the mix of clients there and given the market conditions, is there a risk that almost all of that will remain unoccupied after a year?
Yeah, so Prashant, thank you for that. I think the reality of our business is these lease expiries can be a great opportunity. We mentioned about the fact that Manyata as a whole has approximately 50% mark to market Actually, some of those leases are even higher than that, potentially mark to market. And so if a lease were to expire and the tenant was not to renew, yes, there would be a void period, but also we would be able to secure a very significant market uptick on rentals, which of course would then progress for another 5, 10, perhaps 15 years.
Okay, sure. So the last question is just on this MTM potential. I see that MTM potential is about 30% in our portfolio. But when I look at the spreads on the renewal or releasing side, they are less than 20%. How do you understand this gap?
Yeah, let me explain. So as I understand, the question is overall at a portfolio level, mark to market 29-odd%, and we're talking about a 50% plus in some markets, and then I think last year maybe a 14% mark to market. The issue is that the aggregated number is at 29% across the portfolio with the 190-plus leases that we have. Different properties, different lessees have different lease terms, different rates, and therefore the actual achieved mark-to-market is very specific to individual leases. But I think if you see our historic numbers, we've consistently been able to deliver on mark-to-market, although it can be quite volatile depending on which leases come up. Actually, what we're highlighting is we've got a great opportunity this year and next with our mark-to-market, which is above the overall portfolio average at 47 and 44%. I hope that clarifies.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Michael Holland, CEO, Embassy REIT, for closing comments.
Great. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on today's call for the great questions. We hope that we've communicated that for us, the last year represents a really great result in a challenging year, that it shows that the business is resilient, that we're well positioned for further growth, backed by the strong balance sheet, strong occupier relationships, and our first-class committed on-the-ground teams that we must acknowledge and thank, even in these difficult times, working to keep the business ticking over. And we sincerely send out our best wishes to each one of you and hope that you are well and safe and that your family is also. So thank you for your interest in the REIT and for your time today, each one of you. Good evening.
Thank you. On behalf of Embassy Office Park REIT, that completes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.